to another edition of the Three Bad Rules podcast. I'm your host, Simon Furnival, and I'm once again joined by James Owens. How are you doing, James?
Not too bad. Looking forward to possibly getting my teeth into the matter of whether this summer's transfer window is turning out to rival or surpass my favourite back in 2011.
Yeah, it's a while since we've heard you on 2011, so that'll be good. Unfortunately, we are one wool short this week with Matt Kenny unavailable. So we've drafted in an emergency loan from the Day Trippers. We're delighted to be joined by the Paul Jones of Liverpool Podcasting, Lee Mahady. How are you doing, Lee?
Jesus Christ. How are you doing, guys? Good.
Well, we'll crack straight on with part one and discuss recent games. You know, we last recorded just before Liverpool beat QPR 3-2 in a ridiculously stupid game. But Lee, in terms of the most recent games, you know, Man United and that in the league, how do you think Liverpool have been doing, essentially?
If we're to sum it up correctly, you literally can't. I don't want to like get into a big like a raft of cliches here now, but you can slowly see it kind of, we're kind of building back up to passable adequacy out of abject mediocrity now. It's slowly but surely showing little signs of turning around. Like a lot of players that were, I don't know, I think like a lot of the underperformers tend to still be the guys who are, you know, the typical underperformers. But you can see a lot of those young lads that have only gotten there, they're starting to bed in now that little bit more. They're as Rodgers is starting to like drop the stubbornness, letting them onto the pitch a little bit more. Some of them are actually starting to show that they've actually got fucking ability. Who knew? Like Lazar Markovic, for one, like probably case in point, him. Like,
yeah, that's a very fair point. James, it's quite often been the senior players who've let Liverpool down in this recent run.
It's been a great many of them. You know, take your pick. It's been a lot of things, really. It has been certain senior players. It's also been some of the new signings and new signings who either look like the wrong players or bad players. Because I think we've got to remember that in amongst this, you know, some of the, as you say, you know, people like Lovren, they're senior players, but they're also new signings. You know, I'm just thinking back to, it is a while since we last recorded. I mean, at the point in which we last recorded, we'd had a bad run between two international breaks, and we were kind of looking at it saying, right, okay, well, an awful lot looked wrong in that period, but if we get ourselves together now, and that was before Daniel Sturridge's first reoccurrence of injury, let alone his second, we were kind of looking at it saying, well, if we get it together now, we could be absolutely fine and be totally unaffected by a poor run of form because of the fact that, you know, basically everyone else had been so poor. Well, in the interim, we've only just started to show any kind of signs of getting at all better. And I think it's still very, very tentative in my point of view. And, you know, other teams have, you know, United particularly have started to get it together. So really, I think it's all and good to say we've started to show signs that we might be playing slightly better football. But whether or not we've got the personnel to actually make it count is another question. Because even though it's United away, you've got a bit of a problem when you have one of your better performances of the season, but you still get beat 3-0, which is what happened on Sunday. I mean, Wednesday night against Bournemouth was kind of the reverse of that. And, well, It was like the United game on its head in a way, in the sense that we played well, but we allowed the opposition clear chances. But because we had the better goalkeeper and the better attackers, we took our chances. They didn't take theirs. You know, my concern is whether or not, if we do get better from here, it's going to be too little, too late. And the other thing is, again, you know, we are showing signs of playing better football because we were absolutely dire for long periods in terms of, you know, chance creation and tempo and pressing and what have you. As you say, there are questions over, you know, Rodgers picking certain senior players. Johnson is obviously one that's off the agenda now because he's injured. You know, Gerrard is the other. I mean, Gerrard is kind of an elephant in the room, and Rodgers looks like he might have kind of made a decisive move for the immediate future on it, and then seems kind of not to, because I would, you know, he more or less played 90 minutes the other night, and I would expect we're going to see him start on Sunday because he's Gerrard and it's a big game against Arsenal. It would be quite significant if we didn't. But and then there are other players, you know, Skrtel continues to get picked. You know, there's kind of a transfer policy question about spending money on a left-sided centre-back rather than the right-sided centre-back, both in terms of, one, buying Day and Lovren and sort of over, you know, demoting Mamadou Sakho, and then also in terms of building a defence around Martin Skrtel. So Skrtel is another one. I mean, I suppose you would class Mignolet as a senior player, and obviously we've seen Mignolet's long-term future. Well, Mignolet probably hasn't got a long-term future at Liverpool now, so it's just a big mess generally, and there are one or two better signs in the last couple of games in terms of actually creating chances in our play, but I think, you know, for me, it remains to be seen whether or not that's going to be enough for us to get the results we need to actually stay in with a good chance of actually, you know, somehow cracking into the top four come the end of the season.
Yeah, Lee, one thing I wanted to pick up there on James said was that, you know, whether it's going to be too late for Liverpool, because in the 9 games that we've played since we last recorded, 9 league games, sorry, Liverpool have taken 11 points in those games, and you know we're dropping ever further from the those chasing for the top four places. Do you think it has, even with the slight improvement that we've had in the last couple of games, become a bit too little too late?
I think that I don't think it's quite there in the too little too late category yet, and it's not even so much that we haven't performed so badly enough for it to be too little too late. I think the complete lack of consistency from any other team in the league other than Chelsea or Southampton, or, well, I wouldn't mind Southampton, are also starting to drop off now. I think that the complete lack of consistency from what would be considered our rival teams for possibly the third and definitely that fourth spot, they all haven't really kicked on or, you know, actually put together any real type of form until United, you know, in the last like 3 to 4 weeks maybe. I think that in terms of the league, we're still not, like, you know, we're still not completely out of fucking clutching distance for top four and things like that. Like you said, there's still a good portion of the season left to go. And given a half-decent January window, Daniel Sturridge hopefully coming back for at least a relatively prolonged period of time, if and when he does recover from that, like, pesky thigh injury that he's had for the last while. I think that there is time left, definitely, to make up the grounds to at the very least get our names in the hat for top four again. Whereas I also think that, I think in terms of too little too late, you could definitely point to the Champions League as being too little too late now, obviously, that we're out. Like, I think in a general context over the course of the season, given that we're only properly out of 3 of the 4 competitions that we would have been playing in at the start of the season, I think there's still a great deal left for us to play for. I think, given the result of the draw for the Carling Cup, I think that we may very well be going out of it now. I don't think anybody's going to put the smart money says we're not going to get by Chelsea. So I think there might be a two-legged game left to play against Chelsea in the Carling Cup, and we very well could be going out again. The FA Cup, still very much open season. The Premier League, we're still thereabouts. I said we've hamstrung ourselves greatly, obviously, but there is something still there left to play for. And then I suppose, like, if you're going to, whilst the Champions League is gone now, the Europa League also, as I said, if you decided that the Premier League was a bit too much to be chasing up on at this point, if you decided it was too little too late, the Europa League is also another very viable option now, especially considering that the winner of the Europa League will get a Champions League spot now. It does actually give us another goal to work towards.
I'd actually forgotten that the Europa League gave a Champions League
spot. Well, we all try to forget it, you know.
I'd do my best. But, I mean, James, moving on to the Champions League for a little while, I think we both said in the last recording that we expected that our sort of progression through the group would be that we would go into the battle game having to get something out of it to qualify, but that we would do that. And in the end, we were kind of nowhere near getting anything out of that game.
Yeah, I mean, it's a damning indictment, really, because, you know, we all rejoiced when we saw that draw. We thought, best of both worlds, we've got one of the European elite. Well, it doesn't get much more elite than Real Madrid. They just won it for the 10th fucking time. So, you know, there you go. We've got the sort of the enticing prospect of, you know, big games against one of the greatest European team. But then the other two teams in the group became eminently beatable. And all we needed, you know, we needed 7 points from that group, and we didn't manage it. You know, we got beat over, you know, 2 games by Basel. Now, okay, Basel have got a bit of form for sort of bloody in the nose of English teams, but they've got a bit of form for bloody in the nose of bad English teams. You know, United in 2011 were terrible. You know, they had a terrible group campaign then. When, you know, that's going back 3 years as well. You know, somewhat different set of players. And look, at the end of the day, when all said and done, you know, Basel are a Swiss team. You know, they're not You know, they're not Juventus. They're playing in the Swiss League week in, week out. They're no mugs, but, you know, we're one of the richer clubs in the world. You know, we play in the Premier League every week. And we couldn't beat them at home. I mean, that was the, you know, the first half of that game was an absolute fucking disgrace. It was a game we needed to win, and we just absolutely shat ourselves. And
definitely the low point. It was.
Yeah, it was.
The first
half
of that game was 45 minutes of the most soul-destroying fucking football I'd seen under Rodgers. It was literally as bad as anything under Hodgson.
It was absolute cowardice. Yeah, it literally was. It was just complete and utter cowardice and just, you know, stage fright from a group of players who weren't up to it. And failing to go out was remarkable. But then I never felt confident we would go through from, I don't know, the longer our poor form in general continued. I remember being on an Anfield Index podcast the day we got beat by Newcastle, and it was still very much in our hands then, as it always was. It was always in our hands. And, you know, being asked, did you think we'll get through? And I said, well, at this rate, no. Because, you know, you can only judge us on the way we're playing at the moment. And we didn't, you know, it's only the last two games we've shown any kind of tangible sign of improvement. And it might be Rodgers' first campaign in the Champions League. It might be a lot of the players, but it still doesn't excuse such a poor performance as that for me. You know, getting nothing against Real Madrid, fair enough. But being outscored by Basel over six games, you know, that's not good at all. And, you know, OK, there is a place up for grabs for winning the Europa League. To get into the Champions League, but, you know, to me, it's early days, but, you know, in terms of the personnel we've got, and January isn't likely to totally rectify this if we do much at all, because that remains to be seen, this doesn't look like a team that's going to be particularly well set up to win a competition as hard as the Europa League is when you get to the end of it. I'm not a fan of the Europa League at all, but nevertheless, if you exclude the absolute European elite like Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, Barcelona, perhaps Chelsea. You know, the teams that get to the last sort of four of the Europa League, you know, wouldn't look out of place at the very, you know, the last stages of the Champions League at all. You know, the very end of the Champions League. You know, that you get some good teams in there, and I wouldn't particularly fancy us with our defensive naivety to do the job against enough of them to win the competition over two legs and in a kind of a, you know, in a final. So it's going to be a nuisance to us, I think. You know, we've seen, you know, you've only got to look at Tottenham and Everton's league form this far this season, and many other teams in the Europa League in past seasons, what it does to you having to play Thursday, Sunday. And, you know, you've also got an additional knockout round. And I think, you know, we could pay twice for going out of the Champions League in that respect.
I don't think anybody hates the Europa League quite as much as you do.
No.
Lee, there was no point from the very first game in the Champions League against Ludogorets that we looked like a team who was, you know, in hindsight, going to get through. We managed to scrape a victory there. We fucked up against Basel in both games. We colossally fucked up against Ludogorets when we, you know, conceded right at the end. Do you think it was naivety on Rodgers' half in terms of tactics or players who simply weren't up to the job or somewhere in between or both?
It's definitely a fucking combination it is, man, because, like, you know, as I said, the league form will show you that a lot of these players simply aren't even up to the fucking task of the league, like, let alone, like, the biggest competition on the continent. That's plain to see, like, but I think Rodgers, if you look at that group in the greatest context you can, that really should have been a fucking banger to get through in second, because the fact that there's four teams in the group and the fact that a team like Real Madrid, an all-conquering, fucking obliterating juggernaut like Real Madrid, who have won their, 22nd game in a row recently?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's something like that. Like, an all-conquering fucking giant, like, containing, like, at least about fucking 9 to 10 fucking world-class players, like, in their entire first 11. You think a team like that, right, if we can't beat them twice, then the two fucking smaller teams in the group sure as shit aren't going to, and they didn't either. So, in essence now, you could have actually put the, like, the smart money, you know, at the start of the season. You would have said here, like, we are a big enough club here, right? We probably won't beat Real Madrid either time, but we absolutely can beat the other two teams both times. You know, so we got the luck of the draw of actually having, like, the Basel were the second seed. We had the luck of the draw of getting Basel as the second seed instead of another good team. Like, we had, there was every chance of getting a group of death, and we managed to avoid it and still somehow fucked it up. Like,
yeah, I mean, I think as you know, has been mentioned, like everybody else, when that draw came out, I was celebrating. You know, as you say, getting Basel as the second seeds was the best we could have hoped for, and Ludo Goretz, although I think they got to the knockout stages of the Europa League last year, you know, they were the team that everybody wanted out of pot four. You know, it was literally the best group we could have got, and yet we still, you know, thoroughly fucked it up from start to finish. I don't think there was any point in any game really where we looked like a competent side, like a team that should have been at that level. And yeah, you know, it had been built up so much. You know, the return to the Champions League. You know, I think it was December 2009 when we last played it. You know, that this was us returning to the stage at which we belong, and yeah, we fucked that one right off. And you know,
life gave us lemons, and we stuck them up our fucking rectums. Like,
yeah, okay, that's a very nicely poetic way of putting it. Moving back to the league form for a moment, James, a lot of our problem this season has been scoring goals. You know, in 16 league games, we scored 19 goals, and that's been through, you know, various different formations up front not firing, and both Mario Balotelli and Ricky Lambert really not proving up to the job. Do you think we might have seen almost the last of them going forward with this change that we have seen in the last couple of games?
That's a good question. I think Brendan Rodgers is probably he'll look for any way he can to not have to rely on at least one of them. You know, I mean, I like Ricky Lambert. I was delighted when we signed him because it's a great story, and he always looked a really tidy player at Southampton. And you know, and to be fair, he actually didn't. He did a yeoman's work for us for, you know, sort of three games up front, and then probably just started to kind of, you know, it was too much for him. The run of games was too much for him. Well, you know, don't get yourself into the situation when you're relying on a 32-year-old who used to famously work in a beetroot packing factory.
The beetroot, you know, factory.
Yeah. No one ever mentions that, so I thought I'd throw it out there. But yeah, you know, it's neither of them are very mobile. You know, both of them are the antithesis of what we, you know, of what we did so well last season. Now I can understand that with buying one player of that nature, but two,
as
it's
harder
to understand. Say again?
Buying one player of that nature as third choice. That's why Lambert at the time, when Suarez was still here,
made
sense. Well,
We didn't know at that time that Suarez was off, whereas you would think the club, if they weren't certain, should have had a good inkling, and even if they didn't have a good inkling that it was going to happen, should have had a good idea that it was a distinct possibility. So, you know, that one in retrospect, you'd have to question. You particularly then have to question, you know, working through our options and end up with Balotelli. I mean, the thing I've heard is that Remy failed not one but two medicals. He failed one here and he failed one over in the US during our tour. Which is a shame because I was quite underwhelmed about us getting him, and he's no world beater by any means. But I think, you know, I think a lot of our, I don't think it would have been any excuse, but I think just a player of Remy's nature, who's, you know, not a bad Premier League striker, not an especially brilliant one, but not a bad one, of that nature, you know, fast, runs in behind, finishes well, you know, he's got a goal scorer's instincts. I think that would have papered over a lot of cracks, you know, and I think a lot of what we kind of came to see as midfield problems almost wouldn't have been problems at all if you just had a player like that in the team who actually runs behind, because, you know, Lambert is, you know, coastal erosion's quicker than Ricky Lambert. He is glacial. He's like, you know, for a good while, he wasn't getting a look in. Now, Balotelli, the point has long since passed where I've kind of reached the threshold of how much I can do Balotelli in, because, you know, he's not even been playing that much. He's had his injuries, but I just find him, he actually came on and didn't look too bad on Sunday. I mean, you know, he did his usual thing of actually missing the good chances he had, although he was, you know, I was harsh on him at the time, but he was a little bit unfortunate with the one great save De Gea made. I don't think he's got a goal scorer's instincts. I mean, it's been in the press this week that Roberto Mancini, who was obviously a mentor of his, has been saying that, you know, his idol is Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Well, that won't surprise anybody because they're both 6'3" and bone idle. but the thing is, I think Ibrahimovic has got an infinitely greater capacity to actually score brilliant goals. Whereas if you haven't got that, you damn well better be a great goal scorer as a striker. And Balotelli isn't that at all. You know, I really don't see much in the way of a goal scorer's instinct there. You know, if you're going to be that kind of languid player who just wants the ball into feet, you do need someone up there with you. And that's a question on Rodgers. You know, why Rodgers was so poor at getting players around Balotelli. I don't know. I mean, Rodgers, he's gone taken every opportunity to make it clear he didn't particularly want Balotelli. And, you know, there are a lot of good reasons why you wouldn't, but he still managed him very poorly. But Balotelli, you know, he's very poor at getting back onside when he's off. He ends up offside in the first instance a lot anyway. I think there are signs that he's kind of tried to adapt to running in behind. I mean, there were signs of that on Sunday, but I just don't think the guy's got the capacity to kind of learn and the absolute kind of iron will as a personality to just make those improvements. I mean, I've got a bit of a theory with Balotelli is that, you know, he's one of these lads. He emerged at kind of 17 or 18 and people looked at him and thought, you know, 6'2", he's built like a brick shit house. He's got, you know, lovely touch and he can really strike the ball. Christ, what a player he could be. But that's contingent upon him then going on and becoming more than a lad who's 6'2", built like a brick shit house, got a lovely touch and can strike the ball. And I don't know if he ever has, because I'm not really sure he's the player with the kind of mentality to really want to learn and sort of improve. I can't really find the sort of the word for the type of character he might be, but maybe just, I don't know, not indifferent, but not sort of not kind of driven. I don't know. Maybe I'm being unfair, but either way, the upshot's the same. You know, I've felt for a while. I think, you know, in a year's time, unless we just can't get rid of him, he'll be in Turkey or Russia or somewhere like that. You know, he'll be at Fenerbahce or you know, Besiktas or somewhere. And if he's in one of the top five European leagues, it'll be on a drastic pay cut or probably on loan from us to a club that aren't, you know, top four or top six.
You're fucking going to loan him out to West Ham, aren't we?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, the striker thing is a whole conversation in itself, isn't it? You know, how do we end up not getting, you know, how do we end up with Balotelli as our option? Because as I said, I think someone like Remy, and look, he failed the medical, fair enough. I think a player just of that nature, and he's not even that good, I think he probably would have scored 1 and 2 or better in this team. I think the midfield's lack of creativity wouldn't have looked half as bad. But there are questions to ask of scouting and the committee and getting deals done. And there are questions to ask of how Rodgers has managed what he's been left with. But yeah.
There's a fucking inquisition ready for that kind of thing, Hannah. But like, you know, the thing is about Balotelli, like, you know, if I was actually to sum up Balotelli, like the thing now that he's missing is it's something that he showed in one game in particular. It was during the fucking Euros, was it? The Euros where he absolutely, like, he reamed the fucking hole off Germany. Like,
Yeah.
That was a game where he was, like, I've never seen him work harder in my life, like you said, and he gave the defense just an absolute nightmare. He was unplayable. He was just so hard to fucking deal with, like.
Yeah.
And all that stemmed from was him literally wanting to. It was just the thing that clicked in his head at the time, like. He just clicked. He just said, here, like, I'm going to fucking murder these. And he did murder them. It's that thing. Like, it's just, it seems to be that he holds the key to his own fucking, to his own form. Like,
he's 24. I don't think it's ever going to change. I think he'll probably go to a lower level and he'll end up kind of, he won't be, I don't know if he'll kind of be prolific at that level. He might score more because more of his long range shots will go in against inferior keepers and having a bit more space to get his shots on target and less of them getting blocked, you know. Mate of mine made a point on Sunday, you know, a lot of what the lad does gets blocked, which says he's quite a, you know, an easily read player.
The thing is, and then when you're talking about Remy as well, like, who, as you said, not a world beater by any means, like, maybe just probably scraping or there about the Champions League level, maybe on his best day is a Champions League standard player for another side, maybe not Chelsea, but another side.
He's a Champions League squad player. He's a Champions League squad player. You know, exactly, he's a four-man story. Poor man Sturridge. He's got the same habits. He just does everything to about 80% of the same level. But that would have done us quite nicely, I think.
And this is exactly what the point I was getting onto too. Like, the thing is, that's the reason why I wanted Remy, and that's why I was actually relatively pissed off when he failed the medical, because I was wondering what the alternative would have been. Because I thought Remy, I just, like, to sum up Remy very simply in one sentence, would have been Diet Sturridge. That would
exactly,
have been
yeah.
Easiest way, like, because, like, stylistically, I thought he would have fit into the team a lot fucking easier than any other striker out there would have, like, especially considering, you know, the added, I don't know, the old cliched Premier League experience bollocks, like, but as I said, it can be beneficial to an extent, like, the experience thing, but I wouldn't take it as a reason to buy a player over another one, like, who I would have considered a lot more talented just in a foreign league. But I thought, like, as I said, I thought Remy stylistically was similar enough to Sturridge that he would have actually thrived in this Liverpool team, like, that actually, in terms of, you know, we've only lost a major player up front, which Remy would have been moving into the position of. I thought that with the team not changing between the midfield and the defence to a great extent, or not really losing anyone key to the way we played last season, I thought that Remy would have thrived in this Liverpool team. I thought he would have, especially during these periods where, well, this obviously long period where Sturridge has been injured. I thought Remy actually would have thrived being the main man for Liverpool. I thought he would have relished the responsibility a lot more than Balotelli seems to have done himself, like, today. Like,
yeah, I mean, James maybe should round up the Balotelli talk, given that we're going to go on to players in part two. But do you have anything else to sort of add to your little rant on?
Yeah, that? Yeah. I mean, my thing with Balotelli is the frustration looking at him is, yeah, I mean, the thing with it is, I think, is, look, Ricky Lambert, he probably never had any pace to begin with. He's 32. He certainly hasn't got any now. So you can kind of forgive him for, you know, for not kind of doing some of the things movement wise and tactically that you would want, you know, a complete rounded lone striker to do, you know, not running behind and what have you. Although, you know, to his credit, albeit in an orthodox kind of pattern of play, he did do that against Palace for his goal there. He did kind of break beyond the defender, but, you know, most of the time that isn't going to happen with him. With Balotelli, you know, you look at him and, you know, there are kind of, I think there are three kind of basic things beyond the tactical and the mental that you probably need to occupy defenders and a stretcher defence as a lone striker. And that's, you know, one, if you are too physically slight and you haven't got the kind of either the strength or the grasp of kind of how to use your body to shield the ball, you're not going to be enough of a presence and things aren't going to stick and it's going to be too easy for defenders to kind of keep you quiet. Two, if you're too slow, they'll just probably push up against you because they know you're not going to get away from them. And then three, if you're not technically very good, then again, things aren't going to stick that much for that reason. Someone like Barini, for example, well, Barini's kind of got, you know, the only one of those he's got anything of going for him is pace. He's not even that quick probably, but two of them he hasn't got. Balotelli, I don't think, has got an excuse on any of those because he's not lightning quick, but he's not slow. He's certainly not lacking for, you know, for sort of physical strength and bulk and what have you. And he is good technically. So, you know, you look at him and think, look, what excuse have you got besides just, you know, not having been a particularly good or diligent learner during your career to learn how to just develop the most basic habits like, you know, turn and run behind, you know, don't always want to receive the ball with your back to goal and come towards the ball. And when you do that, do something other than, you know, hang on to it too long or turn and shoot from a stupid distance. That's the frustration with him. But I mean, it's probably too late for him now anyway. You know, Rodgers clearly doesn't like the guy and, you know, he'd have legitimate reasons for not doing it. But I mean, I think he has shown some signs of trying to improve in terms of his movement, but I don't think he's ever going to be a particularly ideal lone striker, because I don't think he's got the attribute of scoring strikers' goals particularly. You know, his finishing hasn't been great in good positions and he's not got into those positions enough or, you know, got in behind enough. But yeah, we didn't do a very good job in terms of, you know, bringing in forwards, yeah.
No, I mean, I was probably one of the biggest defenders of signing him and, you know, one of his biggest fans and maybe sort of last off the bandwagon of Balotelli. But I think there's no question there could be no defence of him anymore. You know, it just hasn't worked. He hasn't been good enough. He has, as you say, he hasn't looked like he wants to learn and wants to thrive. You know, that there's obvious questions of you know, he hasn't been used in a way that gets the best out of him by any means. But then to do that would that have impacted on the way Rodgers supposedly wants to play, but it's all very difficult to kind of think of what I want to say here. But I think it comes down to the fact that it simply hasn't worked. He hasn't been good enough, and it was the wrong option to get it. He was the wrong player for what we wanted to do. I mean, just looking ahead a little bit now, we've got Arsenal on Sunday. And then a run of games that normally, we seem to say this all the time, but normally you would expect could yield a decent number of points for Liverpool. We've got Swansea, Leicester, Sunderland, Villa, West Ham, and then Everton and Spurs in the league. So theoretically, you're looking at, okay, Arsenal on Sunday, Alexis Sanchez up against a defence that I'm assuming is going to contain Dejan Lovren is a nightmare for anybody. and will almost certainly lose. And but you look after that and you think these are games that we should be. And if we want to hang on to any notion that we're in this top four battle, we have to be taking a lot of points from those games. Gee, since any kind of chance that we really can take a good whack of points from sort of the rest of December and January?
I think the thing is, even if we had a good run after the Arsenal game, I think if we don't win that game, it's probably going to be quite difficult for us. Look, I think United are off and away. I think they're gone. You know, we're 10 points behind. They haven't got any, you know, European commitments to worry about. They're probably only going to get better from here. They've got a manager who's probably starting to get his ideas across. I mean, they were actually, you know, it was a very poor game last Sunday. They were very poor, except for, and everyone's said it, and they said it because it was true. They were poor, except in both boxes. Now, at the end of the day, if you can be good in both boxes, it almost doesn't matter how bad you are in between them. You will always have some chance of winning. And against a team who were you know, profligate on the day, and you know, our usual kind of piss poor showing defensively with a championship goalkeeper in behind the defence for us. You know, that was more than enough for them. But you know, so I think, you know, as I said, that, you know, they probably won't get any worse than it has been for them in terms of injuries. So I think we can probably just sort of forget about them. Arsenal are, you know, Arsenal 5 points ahead. Southampton, you know, West Ham are still up there. You know, whether they can hold it together. I mean, there kind of is form there with Allardyce. You know, he kind of did it at Bolton. And I just wonder with him. I don't think they'll finish top four, but I think, you know, they might not shift for a little while yet. I don't know. But you know, Arsenal particularly, you're looking at and thinking, well, we've got to get closer to them, because, you know, and as I said, I don't think a draw is a great result on Sunday. A win would be massive, because suddenly things would look very different. You know, the other problem we got is, you know, even Spurs are 3 points clear of us now and what have you. But yeah, I don't know. We might. I mean, it depends on how much of the improvements we've seen so far continue. On the other hand, you know, we're kind of, I just talked about being good in both boxes. Well, we're between a rock and a hard place with goalkeepers, because we've got Mignolet, whose confidence was obviously shot and wasn't in great form, although it was kind of an odd time to drop him because he'd not made any well, I mean, there was the Ludogorets game, but that was sort of 2.5 weeks before. He'd not made any catastrophic mistakes. You know, we've now got Brad Jones in there, who sort of dives the wrong way for goals and gets done by the most, you know, obvious dummies and everything else. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's another transfer question. How for this long have we kind of, no disrespect to the guy, but how for this long have we had no better than Brad Jones as a backup goalkeeper? Particularly when, you know, it was clear at the end of his first season, the jury was out on Mignolet. I would have been quite happy for us to have got Vorm. I don't know why we didn't, whether we were outbid by Spurs or whether Rodgers was vetoed, but I think another goalkeeper should have been a priority, really, because, I mean, even if something, you know, if something happens to both Mignolet and Brad Jones, we got a kid who, any, you know, hardly anyone's heard of as third choice, you know, Danny Ward. But, you know, you look at Brad Jones' past kind of pedigree. You know, he was signed from the Championship 4 years ago by Roy Hodgson. He's averaged about 8 appearances a season over his career. And when Mignolet's, you know, out of form, that's the guy we're turning to. So, you know, are we gonna even if we do improve in attacking terms, is that going to be enough for us to win more games than we don't? Which we need to do at this point. You know, if we're going to have any hope of finishing in the top four, you know, is that going to be enough? Because
I don't think so.
Well, yeah, I mean, because you know, he's not got a great defence in front of him. He's not going to inspire much confidence in that defence either. We're in a bit of a mess on that score, really. And you know, again, a lot of these they become long term retrospective questions in terms of the transfer policy. You know, did we err in trying to go for a goalkeeper who clearly didn't quite have the skills we ideally wanted for the longer term? You know, when we went for Mignolet, who else could we have gone for? But those are committee questions and questions of should we have just got a sporting director, and some of this stuff you're going back 2.5 years. But as I said, I think, you know, Lee talked before about the fact that we're not out of it yet in terms of a realistic, you know, shot of finishing the top four. I think if we get beat on Sunday, I think we possibly are, because I think you're then looking at one sort of blue chip team, if you like, in Arsenal, who are going to be, they'd be 8 points clear of us. I mean, they'd still be 5 points ahead if we managed to get a draw. And you know,
you see, now this is what I was talking about now, though. You know, like, it's more like if we lose on Sunday, that seriously sends shit like overboard. Like,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we do seem to be stuck in this kind of every game now, given our start to the season, is a must-win game. This becomes another one. Arsenal seem to be picking up some semblance of form after sort of the humiliation against Stoke. They've gone on and beat a very poor Galatasaray side, and then a very good performance against Newcastle last weekend. And as I said before, the prospect of Sanchez attacking our defence scares the shit out of me.
That's the frauds.
This really is the absolute must-win game, isn't it?
Oh, no doubt. And the thing is as well, like you'll think I'm nuts for saying this, though, but you pick the right first 11 against these, it's a fucking winnable game. Like,
I agree. I totally agree.
Like, in terms of the sides that are vying for the third and fourth spot, I think between the others, like, Arsenal probably have, like, probably the only defence that is nearly as fucking awful as ours. Like, like the whole Peter Crouch scoring after 19 seconds thing and all. Like, they're a fucking mess at the back. I don't know what the story is with them, but I don't know. They're just, like, they're fucking gutless at the back. Like,
yeah, well, I mean,
it is true. I mean, one thing I would say is there are certain patterns to Arsenal in these big games, and this is one of the reasons, I think, you know, without wanting to turn this into an Arsenal podcast, I think Wenger is now their biggest impediment, is they make the same mistakes in games against teams around them all the time, or teams they would aspire to try and finish above, which is
they have an inferiority complex.
There is no cover in midfield. And teams get at them, you know, in those areas, the channels and that kind of thing, and draw centre-backs out of position and just humiliate them in those games. So maybe in that respect, particularly with a more mobile kind of front three, maybe there is hope for us, you know, getting people like Sterling, even Lallana, but, you know, getting people like Sterling and that into channels where they just play the same way everywhere. And it's a naive thing to do. I mean, the problem is they might just outscore us and overwhelm us doing that, particularly because we're fucking awful defensively. But there is a degree to which Arsenal are always beatable. They've actually, you know, if you set aside the absolute horror show they had at Anfield in February, they've got a very good record at Anfield, but
they hate physicality, yeah. That's what I will say. Arsenal fucking hate physicality. When a game becomes a match, I find that they really, really don't want to know. Like, I think if you rough them up a good bit, like, I think especially particular individuals in that side, I think if you, like, give them a good fucking few smacks, like, that particular player just tends to fucking withdraw into themselves, and it ends up ruining the flow of their game.
Well, I mean, you only have to look at the game last season at Anfield to see that, and, you know, the way Henderson just dominated Wilshere and Ozil in the middle of the field. You know, he was just, yeah, he got about them, and you know, they quickly did sort of, as you say, just down tools and fuck off. I think, James, you sort of briefly made a good point there. I think Sterling attacking their defence could be a big weapon for us. I don't know whether Mertesacker's back this weekend, but if not, then is Debussy going to play centre-back again? You know, it's a defence that easily can be got at. I think they'd probably love us to play Balotelli up front, and go with that just sort of leaden lack of movement.
He's suspended anyway, isn't he, Balotelli?
Oh, of course he is, because he got the one-match ban, didn't he?
Yeah. That's
the thing. Yeah. Or, you know, even Lambert. I think it's important that we do go with this, stick with this sort of front three that we've sort of stumbled on in terms of the movement for this game. But we'll take a break there, come back after this little musical interlude, and we'll be discussing the playing side of things in more detail. We had a shite defence last year, and we seem to have an even worse one this year.
Dejan Lovren.
£20 million for Dejan Lovren. Is any explanation in which that doesn't just become the biggest clusterfuck of a transfer ever?
Can I go first here?
Yeah, absolutely.
Good. This is actually my opportunity to throw it out there, like, vocally, rather than just, like, through expressing it through typing on Twitter.
I know where this is going.
I don't want to be this guy. I really fucking don't. But back in June, if you manage to go back through my Twitter feed to June, you will see endless tweet upon tweet upon tweet upon fucking tweet about how this was going to be one of the most fucking disastrous transfers of our time. Like, topping anything that Kenny could have brought in. Andy Carroll, anything. It was going to be fucking horrendous. And I fucking told everyone.
I mean,
need to breathe for a second. Like,
sorry, go on.
Southampton in general last season didn't impress me anyway. I actually wasn't too adverse to actually taking a couple of players off them. But the ones that we went after, I wasn't happy with. The first one I would have went after would have been Morgan Schneiderlin. Next one, probably Nathaniel Clyne. The third one, maybe if you had a bit of extra cash lying around, you know, for a young kid to come through that we could kind of develop our own way, probably James Ward-Prowse. But, Lovren would have been so far down my fucking list, it was actually untrue. Like, you got this tag, like, of being, like, one of the best defenders in the league during the first half of the season. I didn't believe any of that at all. Like, I was thinking, I thought Jose Fonte was actually better than he was. And then, two, the other issue of the two defensive midfielders completely protecting him all the whole time. If you look at Southampton in context, like, over the whole course of last season, everybody was, like, really fucking impressed with him. They were the toast of the Premier League, all that shite. Well, at least until the second half when we took over that mantle of being the most, like, sexy team that there was. But, like, when you look at Southampton and where they finished last season, they finished something like fucking 4 or 5 points above Newcastle, who had one of their worst seasons you'll ever see, like. And, like, in context, like, that, and I'm well overusing the word context here, and I have to make a note of that. It's just not that great. Like, everybody's thought, like, Southampton were this wonderful team that completely fucking surpassed expectations, like. And I'm thinking, with the group of individuals that they had as opposed to Newcastle, it wasn't all that good, like. You're looking at it and you're thinking, Newcastle were shit. You barely finished fucking that high above them, like. You know, I'm wondering what it was about. And the thing is, as well, the thing you'll notice too about the Southampton players was that the few that have left, the high profile ones that have left Southampton, none of them since have gone on to any great deal of individual success or form since. It told me that it was more about the manager, which then, you know, in this season is, you know, it's not really being proved correctly either. But that, you never know, that could be about Spurs players rather than his methods. But now, all that tells me now is that it was all about the collective thing with Southampton. None of the individuals were that particularly impressive either. You know?
Yeah.
I thought it was very much a team effort. It was a good collection of players, but none of them were that impressive. Least of all, not the fucking three that we decided to take. Well, actually, Lambert, I was actually behind that signing. But the other two, though, the fact that we forked out 45 fucking million for the pair of them, like, I literally wept.
God, when you actually see that figure, it is just
45 fucking million fucking pounds.
Yeah. I did watch Lovren a bit when, you know, when he was at Lyon, and I was stunned at the reputation that he came over with, you know, or apparently came over with. You know, because, yeah, for Lyon he had occasional patches of good form, you know, but he was never looked like a top quality defender. You know,
yeah, for 8 fucking million, so it wasn't that great.
Yeah. And, you know, and then he's just been horrific. You know, he's got, I think the stat is that he's made more defensive errors than than any other player in Europe's top five leagues.
Another statistic, he was found out, it was actually proven, I think it was might have been Squawker or something like that, that proved he's about as useful as Anne Frank's drum kit.
That's a favourite.
Oh, proving that with stats is excellent work.
You know, it wasn't Squawker, though. Fucking terrible website. Cunts.
Yet, James.
Yeah.
For some reason, he seems to continually get picked.
Jesus! I don't know where to begin. I've been making notes. I don't know which of these points to begin with. I mean, it's interesting because you mentioned before, Lee, you know, you'd like to see Toure and Sacco. Well, a lot of us wanted to see that in about October 2013, and we never did. And God knows why. But I mean, on to Lovren. There are a lot of things here that, you know, led to the scene of the accident. I mean, first of all, there's the Dave Hendrick prophecy. You know, I mean, you were banging the drum, Lee, as well. I remember Dave Hendrick was another, and he was, you know, utterly dismayed on a rival podcast on a weekly basis about Lovren being purchased. One, because he's predominantly left-sided centre back. It signalled that Sacco was basically going to be pushed aside, and two, because you know, the games where, and he noticed this, and I think it's been proved since, and you know, there's various evidence for it. The games where Lovren looked half decent, he'd got, you know, two natural defensive midfielders sat in front of him. You know, we've now spent £37 million on one position in the back four in, well, between the two transfers, it was a little less than 12 months. £37 million. We buy Sacco. Sacco didn't set the world alight in his first season. He had the odd game where he looked ropey. He had the odd game where he looked brilliant. He had a number of games in between where he looked pretty good, you know, which wasn't, you know, there was cause for some optimism there with his first season in England. And it's not easy either in a Brendan Rodgers team, certainly not a Brendan Rodgers Liverpool team, to look decent at centre-back. And he didn't look too bad. I think some people got a bit carried away with him, Sacco. But, yeah, you know, and then, amazingly, you know, okay, Martin Skirtley scored a lot of goals at set pieces last season. That's not great, but it's not his main job. He was almost out the door. He was, you know, literally, he looked like any day he was going to be gone at the start of the 2013-14 season. He came in, he had a good game against United, and he wasn't, you know, he was never out of the team again. Now, the thing with Skirtley is, there is a long-standing correlation over his Liverpool career between Martin Skirtle and poor defensive performances generally and poor results. You know, there is a strong correlation with that.
Well, believe
and
it.
Yeah, you know, we ignore the right side of the defence to push, you know, push aside a guy who's had one season at the club and spend 20 million on a guy who, yeah, and I said this on Sunday, you know, 20 million for Dejan Lovren, different ends of the pitch, but 20 million for Dejan Lovren makes 20 million for Stuart Downing look a little bit unlucky. I mean, you know, the thing with this is with Lovren, and it's a damning indictment of Rodgers, because we know that Lovren was predominantly a Rodgers, you know, he's the one that Rodgers pushed for. Now, the thing I'm going to say about this is, it emerged, I think last week, actually, I think it was in the Sunday papers last week, that Lovren and Gerrard supposedly had, and this is maybe why Lovren was out of the team for a while, Lovren and Gerrard had a big spat after the debacle at Palace, where obviously we conceded, particularly it's the second goal we conceded, it's the one they took the lead with, I think Joe Ledley scored, you know, Lovren fell on his arse. You know, the ball, they got past him, they pulled the ball back from the byline. Gerrard wasn't in the position he should have been, and Joe Ledley, you know, said thanks very much. They you know, Gerrard argued that Lovren had fucked up, correct. Lovren argued that he wasn't getting enough protection, again, correct. So who's at fault? Well, it's the manager, because one, Lovren is his pick, and Lovren, when he did look all right last season, was playing in front of a very 4-2-3-1-ish 4-2-3-1 with two defensive midfielders in front of him. You know, Brendan Rodgers has never bought a defensive midfielder as a manager, and he's been playing a 34-year-old who's never had the best kind of awareness of danger in his career as a defensive midfielder. So they're both right, which makes Rodgers doubly wrong. What can you fucking say about that with Lovren? I mean, he won 3-1 the other night and he came into the team. You know, whether or not he's fit for Sunday is a different question. But, I mean, even then, against, you know, a guy playing for a championship team up front, you know, he got fucking mugged. You know, Callum Wilson should have given the lead. And, I mean, Skirtle and Lovren both, he made absolute mugs of them. He shimmy passed both of them in more or less in one movement. So, yeah, I mean, it looks like as bad a signing as we've ever made. And I'm not a big believer in the idea that players who aren't young and aren't immediately fresh from overseas and young need time to settle and come good. I think generally, if they start shit, they're generally shit. And yeah, I have some sympathy with Lovren with not having much to protection and it being very fucking hard to look good in a Brendan Rodgers team Brendan Rodgers Liverpool team, anyway, as a centre back. But it's been pretty calamitous so far. You know, he's looked like a £20 million white elephant.
Yeah,
like I've never particularly fucking. I don't rate scared later. I don't, but you know, I don't know. There's still sometimes. He's a real Jekyll and Hyde type of thing. Like, sometimes Skirtle
actually... Yeah, some great games, yeah.
He will fill me with a great deal of confidence sometimes. Like, same with Sacco as well. Sacco has not been, like, some... A lot of people, as you said, a lot of people got carried away. An awful lot of people, like, just looked at him, this big, huge, 6'3", like, out, like, Senegalese descent dude, like, who basically, you know, as I said, he gets the beast tag. A lot of the lads who look like him are going to. It's natural, like, he's never really bought... He wasn't the beast. He's not exactly the beast that he was made out to be, joking, like, you know, in jest or anything like that. But the thing is, he never made me feel fucking nervous. Sacco isn't somebody who I'm nearly expecting to make a calamitous error. Whereas Dejan Lovren is about as safe as a glass dildo.
Have you been brushing up on these?
Yeah, I've got like a list I do. I'm actually scratching them off as I go. So,
but I mean, you know, bad as Lovren is, and you know, we're all agreed on this. He's not the only shit part of that defence. Glenn Johnson still plays for Liverpool.
Oh, Jesus, you had to bring him up.
I'm sorry, I did. Fortunately, at the moment, he's injured. But, you know,
look, you know, like, as you say, fortunately, it's, and you know, you do nearly feel bad for using the word, because at the end of the day, shit as he is, the guy's a Liverpool player, he served the club for a long time. You don't want to be happy about your own players being injured. But it's not,
it's
even
just about that it means Rodgers can't pick him.
Yeah, exactly, and it may actually force him to explore alternatives, like, say, the actually fucking talented little right-back that we have from Spain, who is, seems to be better served sitting in the stands playing on fucking Tinder.
And he doesn't seem to fancy Mankio as a right wing-back in this system either. He's putting Henderson there, so...
Yeah, well, to be like, I don't know, I don't fancy Mankio as a wing-back either. I've always
as
more of a defensive-minded full-back anyway, like, but the thing, it's not even that, that is my problem with that decision. My problem with that decision is that the wing-back role kind of puts more, it puts more responsibility onto Henderson that he doesn't need, whereas, you see, I actually think of Henderson as a much, much better player when he's actually freed of that sort of responsibility, especially when he's not covering for fucking Gerrard deeper or anything like that. The best moments I have seen of Jordan Henderson through all the time he's played at Liverpool is when he is playing as on the front foot as an attacking midfielder, using that relentless energy to press the shit out of scared defenders and getting on, like, and getting on the end of crosses and stuff like that, like even the way Sterling did. It was against Ludo Goretz that he scored.
Yeah, like
that kind of ball. Like, that was really impressive. That was like, that was when you see the best of Henderson, when he's actually nearly carefree. Like, that was the thing. That's my beef with the right wing back role for him. Like that, but that's another thing entirely. Like, it's just, I don't know. Like, the fucking the right back, the fullback situation. Like, I don't know. I fancy Mankio a lot more as a player than Alberto Moreno. Anyway, who actually I think, who game by game is actually starting to make me more nervous. It's those forays forward and the lack of willingness to get back and stuff like that. Like, for United's first goal, like, I think Carragher absolutely butchered him. Like, Carragher had a lot of fucking choice words for him and Coutinho throughout that goal. Like, and if you actually look at that, if you look at his positioning right from when he gets up to one end of the pitch for when United break the other way, he really takes his time getting back. And then when he actually finally somehow gets back into position ahead of the play, like, you know, because it had slowed down, it gave him enough opportunity to get back. He stays over. Instead of covering in behind for where Valencia was going to run into after he nutmegged Allen, he kind of, like, he moved in behind sort of instead, like, in slowly in behind rather than covering the space, like. And I know he's only 22 and stuff like that, but 22, like, and he had a decent bit of first-team experience at Sevilla, like, that was, like, more of a fucking rookie mistake rather than, like, a kid, like, you know? It was rookie, it was. I don't know what it was about it. It didn't really seem something to do with age. It just seemed brainless, like.
Yeah, he certainly didn't seem like a £16 million fullback at that point.
I don't think he is, anyway. Like, I think, like, I said, now, I'm not trying to get into this whole, like, I knew this, I knew that. As I said, Lovren was the one who I was absolutely sure was going to be a fucking disaster. The other ones, a couple I weren't really that happy about, like, but Moreno, to an extent, I was happy about. I would have there were others I would have preferred a lot more, like, but Moreno, now, I thought, now, I understood, like I said, from watching him play, he is, like, I actually said, there is latent talent in there. There's definitely latent talent in there. There's a bucket load of energy, good bit of endeavour, brave enough kid, but the biggest problem I had with him was just how sloppy he tended to be, especially on the ball as well. At Sevilla, he frustrated the bleeding life out of me. Like, some of his decision making, especially going forward, was awful. And, like, it was just it wasn't even his willingness to get back or something like that. It was more about how he did it. And then, like, it was the same thing for United's first goal. The fact that when he actually did get back, he kind of made the wrong decision on where to cover. And that was the part. This is my thing about him, and it seems to be showing a lot more game after game now, and it's starting to worry me a little bit.
James, is there anything positive about our defence that can be said at the moment?
I mean, I think the one thing you can see is that I think in the players we bought in, there was some kind of germ of a plan to have an idea of, like, winning the ball back high up. You know, Lovren, his natural game is to be quite aggressive. You know, Mankio, again, he likes to, a bit like Flanagan does, you know, he likes to get tight to a wide player, not let them turn and be very aggressive in the challenge. And Moreno's very much that way as well. And I mean, in that sense, that's one thing you could look at as maybe a positive thing. I mean, now Mankio, the thing I'll say for Mankio versus Moreno, and I think, you know, I was really, really impressed with Moreno at first, but what we've seen since, he flats to deceive a bit in attacking terms, because I think when he does get forward, I think you would want to see him doing less stuff outside the width of the box. You want to see him kind of getting into the box a bit more, or getting into, you know, not putting in a conventional kind of aerial cross so much. Because we're only that kind of team. We're certainly not with the front three we're playing at the moment. You'd want to see more of him getting into the width of the penalty area, or at least pulling back the ball from the byline, rather than kind of playing in so much, you know, almost being a bit too English. The thing is, I don't think, you know, there are certain roles, you know, certain goals we've conceded in which he's been culpable. I mean, last week is maybe one example, like Lee said. On the other, maybe it's a bit of being unsure of his job in what was a new system, and that's something where we're probably going to suffer a little bit for having all these midweek games, which are going to continue with the Europa League, relative to last season. When, you know, if you're going to play a new shape, as we did on a number of occasions last season, you might have, you know, played on a Saturday, rest on a Sunday, play again the following Saturday, and then kind of Monday, but certainly Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you would have a good three days solid, if not four, to kind of work on a new shape for a game. We haven't got that now. Maybe that was one of the reasons Moreno screwed up. On the other hand, you know, maybe it was a lot more basic than that, like Lee said. But a couple of goals we've conceded, like, you know, City away and Newcastle away, you thought, yeah, those are goals that come from, he's not made calamitous errors, but they're kind of, a naturally defensive-minded fullback is maybe a little bit more switched on and aware of danger in those situations. I think that's maybe a harder thing to develop as a player than what Manquillo needs to develop, which is a bit, to be able to do a bit more on the ball, certainly in the final third, but just in possession generally. He's neat and tidy with the ball, but he's quite safety first. Now, that's no bad thing in a 20-year-old fullback who's, you know, not actually played that much senior football. So, yeah, those are two of the signings that don't look terrible. But, I mean, I don't know, the back end of the team as a whole, you know, we've talked about Lovren. I mean, £37 million. And for different reasons, the £37 million we spent on two left-sided centre-backs looks like a write-off. Meanwhile, Martin Skrtel is 30 now. He's never going to be any better than he is. He's, you know, his weaknesses are never going to change, and he's still, you know, playing. Not that I'm, you know, by any means Skrtel's biggest critic, but, you know, he is what he is. You know, you can't. The body of evidence is there because he's been a Liverpool player for nearly 7 years, and he's, you know, he's never been ultra dependable over any length of time. And as I said, there's a correlation between Skrtel and other centre backs not looking as good alongside him as they do against other centre backs. We've discussed the goalkeeper situation a bit, but I mean, there are a lot of plans that kind of are in tatters, really, as far as that end of the team goes, I think.
Yeah, I mean, moving forward slightly, our midfield hasn't exactly shone this season either, you know. Joe Allen, Stephen Gerrard were a horrific partnership against United, frankly. And then Lucas has been drafted back in, and Emery Chan appears to be the one with actual talent and potential who hasn't got a sniff since Chelsea. It's hugely frustrating to see things like that.
The midfield could be one of the biggest issues, like, and I don't know, as I said, this is very much Rodgers' issue, I think. Like, it's not even really down to the personnel. I think, like, different combinations of that personnel can work, like, especially if you have a midfield three. Like, I like those midfields for a 4-3-3 and stuff like that. Like, I would have, with United especially, like, as I said, unfortunately, Gerrard's name is going to get him on that team sheet every time. Like, as I said, the leadership aspect, which I'm starting to believe is becoming increasingly more overrated as time goes on, the leadership aspect of it is going to keep getting him in, and I think it will be to the team's detriment a lot of the time. Like, I don't think it's not that he shouldn't play, it's that his game time should be far more managed at this point. I think Gerrard would have a lot more to offer probably post 65 minutes in a given game, no matter who it is, when his lack of legs and his lack of tactical awareness is going to count for a lot less, especially with the other team being great, like, gradually more fatigued. And I think that, you know, a fresher Gerrard will just, it'll seem a bit like more full of life when he comes on later in the game. That's just my straight opinion on him, as I said, because I don't want to be like, you know, don't want Gerrard to play anymore. Still respect him for who he is, respect what he brings, like, but you see now I'm starting to watch his contribution continue to dwindle, and it's frustrating to watch. I think that it's very much up to the manager to notice this before. Like, if we can notice it, he should be able to notice it too, and he should be able to manage it better than he has been. It's for Emre Can, like, I'm afraid I don't really have a good answer as to why he's not getting into the team any, like, you know, more. Like, especially since that Man of the Match performance against Chelsea, I'm not really sure what Rodgers saw in that game to subsequently drop him for the next six games. Like, it's completely inexplicable. So I think that that lad has a great deal to offer, and I think especially like another player like Lazar Markovic, who was being fucking pilloried like in his early games. A lot of people were just like, we've wasted another 20 million. And I'm thinking, this kid's 20, guys, like, calm down. There's also another 20-year-old on that bench who I think, like Markovic, when given that chance, is going to break out in the same way. I think Markovic just starting to show form now. Something similar will happen with Emery Chan if he is just given the opportunity to do so. Like, I think the fact that all these players are bought, they were bought to play, to flesh out a squad, to make it better equipped to play in a greater range of competitions, especially in Europe. And I'm, this was the thing that baffled me so much about the manager, is the fact that he seemed to have had, like, he was given a much bigger squad to work with, yet he seemed completely resistant to fully utilising it. It's odd. Like, I'm getting more frustrated with Joe Allen. I'm starting to, like, he's starting to offer less and less, and especially if he starts a game, he only really seems to be arsed when he comes on off the bench. Lallana, I've always thought of more as a forward anyway. I see him more on the left wing or the right wing or something like that, where you can kind of cut in or you can kick in crosses or look for cutbacks. That's generally my opinion of Lallana. Coutinho, I love to see in the eight now, but I think when he plays in the eight, he's going to need personnel to help him out as well. Like, I think I'd love to see him in a midfield three with Henderson and Emery Chan, maybe at the back of the midfield. I think that Coutinho would have benefited, like, especially if we're going to continue with Raheem Sterling as the striker. Coutinho loves to have runners ahead of him to ping in balls in between the lines to try and split the defence, and especially somebody who can run in behind like Sterling can. I think he has a great deal to offer in there. But I don't know what it's not. As I said, I'm not too unhappy with the midfield. I'd like a more orthodox defensive midfielder I'd love one in January. I would love somebody who can screen the defence and protect it a lot better. Trying to get onto the last bit of it there now. Yeah, I think if we got a screener, a controller, a kind of like one, someone who is willing to sit deep and someone who has the ability to do it, I think that midfield, I think with the personnel there, is actually generally well balanced. I don't think it's as bad as it's made out to be. I think it is better than the sum of its parts. Like,
yeah, I think that's a fair point. It's not performing to anywhere near to the level that it could do.
No, it's not. It isn't. Like,
yeah.
I do think Gerrard is the main problem here. As I said, James is saying he's the elephant in the room. He is. I think the biggest question around our midfield is, would it be better with or without Gerrard? And you see, the thing is, until Rodgers can conjure up the fortitude to actually say to him, look, I'm the manager, like, until he actually manages to rise above the institution, the character of Steven Gerrard in that dressing room, until he can actually say that he himself as the manager is more powerful than this and makes the conscious decision to try a midfield out that does not include him, I think we're going to continue to be hamstrung. I think that there are probably midfield combinations that could also work with Gerrard in addition to combinations that can work without him. I think it's the point is now finding a balance between the midfields that you play without Gerrard and the ones you play with him, and what games those balances are going to play in, what those combinations, what those trifectas are going to play in.
James, just maybe one last point to wrap up part two. I Lee mentioned there, you know, about bringing in a defensive midfielder in January. What do you think we do need in January to rescue this season and to keep us in that top four battle?
More than we're realistically going to be able to go out and get is the short answer. Because we saw in the summer, you know, we all, and I was probably one of the worst for this, and I was probably, you know, even worse about the flip side of it, which is the idea that if you're in the Champions League, suddenly it's, you know, it's a lot easier to get good players. In theory, it should be, but, you know, one season back in, even one as impressive as the way we got back in, clearly didn't do it, you know, unless there are just things that we can't be absolutely sure of that some people might suspect about, you know, incompetencies about the way we go about, you know, pursuing players and, you know, I don't know, dealing with agents and making offers and offering wages and that kind of thing. We don't really know on some of that. And that's kind of the eternal frustration when trying to kind of apportion blame with Liverpool. Yeah, I don't know. This is the unfortunate thing, really. I think, you know, you look at a situation like Mignolet, we're being linked with goalkeepers all of a sudden. Well, OK, great. We kind of got caught a little bit between two stools, I think, because, as I said, we bought him in, and at the end of the day, for the first half of last season especially, he was an upgrade on Rayner in the sense that he was better at the most important aspect of it. You know, say what you want, and Mignolet's poor in a lot of these regards, and he resembles kind of Che Given, which isn't really good enough for what we want. But, you know, he's poor at, you know, commanding his area. He's not good with the ball at his feet. He's not a great presence or a great communicator. But he was an upgrade on Rayner, which wasn't saying much, I suppose, in terms of stopping shots. So we probably at the stage where we thought, OK, he's not kicked on and developed the way we would have liked. His form in the second half of the season wasn't as good as the first. But you can't really, you don't want to write off £10 million with a goalkeeper just yet. Unfortunately, pretty quickly, it's not worked out for him this season. And you're in a situation where you're a team that are out of the Champions League. You look like you're probably not going to get back in next season. And you've got to go shopping for a goalkeeper again. And it was difficult enough for us to get players in the summer when we got Champions League football guaranteed. We may well not have that come next summer. Buying in January is difficult. You know, the latest word is we may well pay €6 million to bring in a 19-year-old in Divock Origi, who's already our player from Lille. You know, Origi, I don't think he's scored in over 2 months. He's not scored in nearly 1,000 minutes of football. He's getting booed by his own fans. He missed a penalty last week. And our solution to the fact that Daniel Sturridge is brilliant but injury-prone seemingly is possibly, and this is the latest word because these things change, but it's possibly to bring in a 19-year-old who's not scored since, I think it might be the 2nd of October. I think it'll be a struggle. The other thing is, you know, is the money there? You know, you hear other things that suggest we've got to sell before we can buy. Now, if that's the case, I don't really have a great deal of sympathy with Rodgers over that, because to my mind, the squad's a bit too big. You know, we've got players kicking around. We've got three right backs. Okay, one of them's been injured in Flanagan. We've got Suso, who doesn't even get on the bench, even when we've had quite a few injuries of late, who, you know, we didn't offload. We've kind of got two or three more players than we need. Say again?
He's been injured himself, though, for a while, hasn't he?
Suso, okay. Sorry.
He's only recently just gotten back onto the training ground now. I think he's still still a little bit away from full fitness, but I think I've only really recently seen photos of him in training.
But, I mean, even then, you know, we've probably got more players than we need. The problem is we screwed up in buying players because we've not got as many good ones as we need. I don't know whether I would look at the defensive midfielder because, I mean, you know, Lucas, when he has had to play, albeit in teams that have been set up very stodgily, hasn't been terrible. I don't think he's the long-term solution by any means. That might be Chan's natural position. He's a weird player in some ways, Chan, but that's probably another discussion for another time. But, you know, Chan, obviously, you know, that's one position he can play. I don't know if we'll be looking at a defensive midfielder. You know, the fact that we left ourselves with the options we did is questionable, certainly. But, you know, I'd be happy to look at a striker and a goalkeeper. It's such an obvious thing to say. You know, the whole just principle of just improving either box, because we have improved. You know, our players improved a little bit in recent games, and maybe we found a system which isn't so kind of so just stodgy as playing Balotelli up front in a 4-2-3-1 or Lambert, but. Yeah, I mean, there are all sorts of things you could improve. I don't think there's any point buying centre-backs. You know, try and get more out of what we've got by, you know, maybe protecting them better system-wise, or just not picking Lovren all the fucking time and not always playing Gerrard three times a week in front of him. Another striker, maybe. Maybe the urgency for another striker is mitigated by the fact that, look, eventually Sturridge is going to get fit. How long for is another question, because he's very fragile. But the way Sterling has done up there, even though he missed chances on Sunday... A lot of people were saying for a while, why don't we put Sterling up there with Balotelli, because he will run beyond and he's not a terrible finisher. Despite, I know he missed chances against United, but albeit against a world-class goalkeeper. But yeah, I mean, striker and a goalkeeper maybe, but I wouldn't think we're going to bring too many players in, because one, it's hard in mid-season, and two, is the money there. So I'm coming
home. I'm coming home. The big question that's hanging over a lot of this season is Brendan Rodgers. You know, there's been a lot of people now starting to turn against him, starting to think that maybe his time is up. There's been vehement defenders of him as well. Do you think he is the right man to turn things around, essentially?
Over the last while, my estimation of that has continued to, it's absolutely nosedive, to be honest. And, you know, it's not even just to do with results, like as I said, because there is a bigger picture to look at that isn't just, it's not just shaped by results, even though it is a great majority of it. Like the picture is majorly, it's the results, because even if you're like, even in the grand scheme of things, you could be playing shit. There could be a shitload of problems. But if you're continuing to consistently put points on the board, like no one will give a shit. Like, whereas it's not just that the fact that we've been bad or the fact that we've lost games, it's just the fact that I was nearly convinced, like, you know, during November, early December, like I was absolutely convinced that the man who took us to second in the league last season has just been fucking. He's been murdered and replaced by some fucking horrible doppelganger that is like trying to destroy us from the inside out. It literally got to that point. Like it felt dire. It felt so fucking soul destroying. It was that. I don't know. It's just like it's between the points, the team being bad, the players not even really seeming to be as arsed as they were last season, the fucking bizarre team selections, tactical decisions mid-game, all of it just seemed to be wrong, and all of it seemed to be fucking counterproductive. And you're thinking, if somebody like a lowly little twat like me, like mouthing away on a Skype call, is able to see this, you're wondering how a man who has paid fucking millions per year cannot see this. A man who trains these players day in, day out, is making these bizarre nonsensical decisions that seem to completely work against him and everything that he has tried to build previously. It felt like an absolute mire. It felt like an absolute black hole that he was literally willing to dive into and just see where it fucking took him. I was convinced for a while that he wanted to be sacked, because some of the decisions that he was making, like playing, like I know fucking like Balotelli was injured, Sturridge is injured, but Even Barini and stuff, like, you know, the fact that he wasn't even on the bench is another option for when Lambert's fucking lungs started to give out. Like, he played him 6 games in a row, made him play nearly 90 minutes 6 times in a row. 5 times in a row, definitely he did. And I was thinking, like, what are you doing at this point? You need a defibrillator on standby for him. It's going to die. Like there was games, like, where he was starting. Like, after, I think, the 3rd game in a row that he started, you could see after the first half that he was out on his feet. He was, like, he was dying, like. And the fact that he had at least not even another set of legs that was at least used to playing as a striker on the bench, it was bizarre and it made no sense. And the fact that he seemed to be intent on burning Sterling out when he didn't need to be burned out. The fact that even if there's plenty of the new signings that are young, plenty of them that may be inexperienced, and maybe, you know, they may be having to acclimatise the Rodgers' way of thinking, training, methods, whatever, like Emre Can and Lazar Markovic. You were thinking there were so many times, like, late in so many games throughout the October or November period, we were all like, I remember being on Twitter, I've seen plenty of people saying, I was shouting at the television in pubs, other people were shouting at televisions. You're thinking, man, you've got options, get someone on, what the fuck are you doing? He seemed very unwilling to make substitutions as well. I think there was a period where you made very little, like over the course of about 7 games, you only made like 3 or 4 substitutions. It was bizarre. Like, so many things I couldn't believe. So I think in essence, like I said, it dipped to such a point now by early December, by the United game, I was literally like, even though ironically the 3-0 at United was where I was actually starting to see things slightly turn around, I was also, I think I've nearly ended up making peace with the fact that maybe last season was just flash in the pan. It's the fact that the only two players that have been withdrawn from his previous Liverpool side that would have actually been, you know, made a major difference in it, with the two strikers, one being sold, one being on the treatment table. All that ended up telling me, though, is to say, like, you know, the common denominator in here between the good form last season and the bad form this season is the strikers. It's starting to me. I have thought on a great deal of occasions that it was literally just them, and that might have been all it was. We won off the back of having two great strikers. We got so close to it off the back of having two great strikers. And now that they're gone, now the defensive issues that were actually probably still as bad last season aren't getting masked anymore. Yeah, I've honestly questioned whether he's the man to take us forward. I'm not sure if he is anymore. I think that sacking him mid-season would be completely counterproductive, totally. And I think he is only in the job because of the absence of a decent caretaker at the moment. And I do think that FSG are actually considering their options and looking for replacements now. I think coming up to June, especially if he does, like, it's not looking likely that he's going to achieve any goals that FSG would have wanted for this season, like especially Champions League qualification again, maybe getting to the knockout rounds of the competition itself, maybe a good cup run, or dare I say a cup win. It doesn't look like any of those goals are going to be met at the moment. Not with the way things are going now. Not after only two good games that we've turned around. Like not two good games. Not after a 3-0 at United where we kind of turned a little bit, and then a cup win against the Championship side. I think that, in my opinion, overall, going forward at the moment, no, I'm not convinced he's the man to take us forward. And I think in June, I would not shed a tear if he was cast aside and a replacement was brought in. Once that replacement was somebody that I agreed with, somebody like Jurgen Klopp or Frank de Boer or another manager that I've been incessantly whining about on Twitter the last few days.
Yeah, I think that's about where I am. As well, I think, as you say, sacking him before before the end of the season wouldn't seem to make much sense given the options that are out there, and certainly putting, you know, Colin Pascoe in caretaker charge or something would be a fucking disaster.
That's, you'd only do that, you'd only sack him mid-season if you're actually, if it gets to the point where you would literally be more satisfied with no manager being there than having him there.
Yeah.
That is the point where you sack a manager mid-season when you don't have a competent caretaker to take over. You just literally have to say anything would be better than this cunt, like.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm certainly not there yet. I do wonder whether FSU will have almost a bit more patience with him. And even if we have a disastrous season this year, they might give him the start next year because essentially he was their pick. You know, I don't think they're going to be quite as ruthless as they were with getting rid of Dalglish, because, you know, Dalglish, although they appointed him, he wasn't their man. They almost were railroaded into that. Whereas Rogers seemed to be, you know, the guy that they settled on and went with. So I wonder whether that might have an effect on it at all. But I mean, James, what are your thoughts on Rogers at the moment?
Reading something from just before midnight on, a minute before the 4th of July became the 5th of July. Be interesting to see how Brennan Rogers gets on next season without Suarez, as many shrewd judges, have him down as a balderdash chancellor. Well, you know, it's like Brennan Rogers, you know, has somehow in some perverse way been steadfastly determined to prove John Merrow right.
You had to get the marrow in, didn't you?
Yeah, and I had to point
never out. Going a podcast without getting a marrow in.
We've tried to get him on, but he's very, very coy and reluctant when it comes to these things. So
just wants to live.
I'm wondering whether he hasn't quite got the Scouse credentials he'd like us to believe, where the county road is, you know, is County Road in Oslo, and he really is Jan Merrow from Oslo, as I speculate. I don't know.
Some would be saying that some would say he's actually just a balderdash chancellor.
Yeah, perhaps so.
Maybe there is no Merrow.
You what?
Maybe Merrow is not real. Maybe there's an idea of a Merrow, some kind of abstraction.
I mean, Rogers, look, I said, and I was bloody angry on Sunday, as we all were, and it was mainly Lovren, because, I mean, we've not really mentioned Alan Lallana. You know, Lallana, you know, fool's business paying £25 million for a 26-year-old who's just basically a good squad player, but he's been doing quite well recently, you know. Scored a good goal against Southampton. Leicester, was unlucky not to have set one or two up against United. Was unfortunate to be subbed at half-time in that game, and he had a good game in midweek. And maybe this is a system that will suit him more too, and he's a decent player. Yeah. But, you know, one of the big things against Rogers, actually, is, and you're going back two and a half years for this, and whether or not a sporting director would have made all the difference to this, I don't know. But I remember, you know, there were two things I would say about Rogers which have come back to the surface in light of results and performances and managerial decisions this season, that I mentioned on this podcast going back a long way, Simon, you might remember, which is that, you know, when we got him in, he was one of many could-bes we could have gone out and got. We couldn't get anyone who was more than a could-be. That was the position we were in. We'd finished 7th, 6th and 8th in the previous three seasons. And I was happy enough with Brennan Rogers, you know, as happy as you could be, you know, with a manager with a limited track record, you know, it would have been him or someone like Martinez or someone of that sort of ilk and stature at the time. But my slight concern was that FSG had, you know, they'd obviously made it sort of known to the journalists quite, you know, explicitly that they had the plan of bringing in a sporting director. All of a sudden, you know, we get the word there's not going to be a sporting director, but they're appointing Brendan Rodgers, and it's a Brendan Rodgers say-so. This being a 39-year-old who'd just come in from Swansea City and had one season in the Premier League, had persuaded them against appointing a sporting director. Now, if that was for Rogers to have more say over transfers, and apparently, and again, he kind of won a bit more political power over that when he negotiated his new contract in the summer, because, hey, he just nearly won the league against incredible odds. He's really not vindicated himself at all, because we know that he is very fond of going after players from a much lower level because he's worked from before. People like Ashley Williams, Leon Britton, Neil Taylor, Ryan Bertrand. These are all players he wanted. And that he was vetoed on, basically. He obviously brought in Allen and Barini. You know, Fabio, okay, 2 years is a long
apparently
time.
That's what led to the vetoing.
You are, sorry?
Apparently, apparently the signings of Barini and Allen, like signings that were absolutely, like, you know, unequivocally Rogers' choices, apparently because of that, like, they were literally, those two players especially, were major, major influences behind the whole transfer committee thing happening.
I think I'm right in saying that the transfer committee was always, there was always going to be a committee of some nature, and the only reason it didn't kick in until September is because the City people were on gardening leave. I always thought that was the case. I don't know, but I mean, you know, Alan, look, it was a lot of money. He's a neat and tidy player. He always looks bad in a team where either end isn't working, because he's a link player. He's a middle third player, and I'm fine with that. It was a lot of money to pay, but I'm fine with him as a squad player. Barini is one where, you know, look, Rogers, you know, talked up Barini, you know, 2 years is a long time in football, but Rogers talked him up and brought him in, and now, you know, people who don't rate him like me are wondering why he's not on the bench and Rogers wasn't picking him. Maybe that will become clear. Maybe a deal is agreed for him to leave on the 1st of January and they want to minimise the risk of him getting injured and scuppering that, because we need the money to go out and, you know, buy someone else, hopefully. Because like I said, you know, but Barini offers certain things, but I don't think he's a particularly good footballer. But I mean, Rogers, look, Lovren was one he pushed for. Lallana was one he pushed for. Lambert, likewise. You know, he clearly likes English players. Well, you know, you pay through the nose for English and British players. He clearly likes players he's worked with before. Well, you know, that would be great if you'd just been managing Real Madrid and you could just join you. But when you're coming from Swansea and you've managed a few players who were in Chelsea's reserves in 2008, it's a little bit different. So that's one thing against him. Go on, Lee.
Sorry, man. I was just saying, like, that the Chelsea thing that you got into, you know, working with people in the Chelsea reserves. I said, I just think that showed a bit. It showed a naivety that still kind of seeps through every now and again.
The other thing, which I said on this podcast before, and again, lightly, I don't want to. Pains to sort of emphasise. I don't want to sound, you know, all told you so. But at the end of his first season, again, you might recall it. I did ponder whether he was ever going to, because we hadn't had a great defensive record that season, I did ponder whether he was just the kind of manager who was never going to put together a particularly solid defensive team. I'd wondered the same thing about Martinez at the time, who was about to get the Everton job. He'd just won the FA Cup, but he'd also got Wigan relegated. And I just wondered whether they were managers from sort of similar stock, who there was such an emphasis in the training ground hours on patterns of possession and, you know, rotation of the midfield triangles and attacking movement and, you know, technical exercises and, you know, being good at turning with the ball and all these things that are important to, you know, sort of having 60% of the ball or what have you, whether enough work was done defensively. And I still wonder about that. And I still wonder whether or not, unless you've got two absolutely world-class strikers like we had last season, whether or not some of his ideas can work as well. Because, I mean, it was an interesting point that it was made on Monday Night Football by Neville and Carragher. And the two people who, you know, should know what they're talking about with defending is that, you look at the Liverpool back four and they don't really seem to function especially well as a unit. They almost don't function discernibly as a unit at all. You know where it's, I mean, it's something which is kind of derided at times as a feature of Roy Hodgson's teams or Tony Pulis out there on the training ground getting players to do their running drills by running in banks of four. But, you know, you see this sort of very collectivized movement of lines when the team haven't got the ball. There isn't quite that sort of solidity of shape and organisation and uniform movement with Liverpool. And I wonder whether we're ever going to see that or whether the emphasis is there. Now, you might, well, if you've got Real Madrid squad, that it might be fine that you don't do that, because the attacking players you've got are that brilliant that they'll just outscore the opposition. We were kind of in that position last season. But, you know, that was because of one or two exceptional transfers that would be hard enough for any club to replicate in a 2 or 3 year span like we did, in terms of particularly Suarez and Sturridge, and they would probably be even harder for us because we seem to have an incredible propensity to screw it up. So that's another thing, is, you know, just whether we erred in obeying the, you know, his wish not to have a director of football, whether, you know, he's ever going to be particularly adept at making a team hard to score against. And my big thing before Sturridge got his last recurrence of the injury was, even if Sturridge comes back into this team and we suddenly look brilliant, my estimation of Rogers, a bit like Lee, and I don't know, you know, I put this to you after as well, Simon, my estimation of Rogers took a big dent over September and October and November, because there were a lot of things not right there, both in terms of the shape we took up and in terms of the way that just didn't seem to get the best out of the, you know, the Indy, like, you know, Jordan Henderson is a two in a 4-2-3-1. I don't think that suits him. Steven Gerrard's never been great in a deep line midfield two. Coutinho is probably better as an 8 than a 10. Balotelli was woeful as a lone striker. You know, Raheem Sterling played largely on the right when he's much better from the left. And there were lots of things he did, which, you know, over a long period of time, he persisted with things that were very, very hard to fathom. And, you know, even if Sturridge had come back in and papered over a lot of the cracks, as I think he probably had the ability and the attributes to do, and may be probably harder for him now by the time he does come back, because he will have been out for 4 months and it will take him a while to get up to speed. But I think his a lot of his decisions this season, you know, in going out of the Champions League, in the teams he's picked when we've had big runs of games, in failing to really face down the issue of Gerrard playing all the time, my estimation of him has took a dent. And I'll be honest, I think if we don't finish in the top four this season, judging the teams around us so far, if it's kind of less than about 70-odd points to get in the top four and Rodgers doesn't do it, I wouldn't, you know, he would have to have probably won the Europa League and got us into the Champions League that way for me to be kind of at all sure about the idea of him staying on, because and he's got his work cut out, because we'd have to improve quite dramatically in the league. Maybe, you know, the shape we've adopted could be a solution for a while, and we're just going to create more and, you know, hopefully score more off the back of that and, you know, become more confident and just win more games. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff he haven't liked and it's been hard to understand. And I think the strain has told on him as well, because he's become more, you know, critical of other people and, you know, more... Look, football's results, isn't it? You know, everything the manager says that could be, you know, taken in a positive light. If you win, if he's saying it and you're not on a good run, he might be saying exactly the same thing, but it gets, you know, micro-analysed and dissected and the manager gets pilloried. Nevertheless, there are a lot of things where he's had things to say that have just, I don't know, it seems like the strain has shown on him a lot as well. He may come through it. I mean, the word you hear, not that the club, I suppose, would be too keen to leak it mid-season if it weren't the case, but the word you hear is he's very much still FSG's man and they're not really thinking too seriously about replacing him. How long that'll carry on being the case, I don't know, because we need a very good run from here, I think, to sort of get into the top four. I think if we get in the top four, you know, you maybe put it down to experience this season. But looking at the teams competing for it at the moment, with the exception of United, who've started really picking up points, you'd kind of look at it and say, well, if you don't get in and it's, you know, it's 70 points in or less, what's your excuse? Or even if it's a bit more than 70 points, given where we came from last season, what's your excuse? Okay, Daniel Sturridge was injured, but, you know, what about the players you spent a lot of money to bring in? What about, you know, the failure of your plan to tighten things up? And yeah, I think he'd certainly have to finish in the top four. I don't think winning a cup would save him. It didn't, you know, didn't save Kenny Dalglish, and I don't think it would or should save Rodgers, unless it's, say, the Europa League, and the league form over the remainder of this season is dramatically better. Yeah, so I don't know where you would stand on that, Simon.
Yeah, I mean, I think you do. I absolutely agree with you. My estimation of Rodgers, my belief in his ability to take us on to that next level has waned significantly over the last couple of months. I think particularly since we last recorded, you know, you look at the league results and, you know, from sort of Hull, the 0-0 against Hull, the loss against Newcastle, Chelsea, the debacle against Crystal Palace, you know, we snuck a victory against Stoke, and, you know, these are all just mounting up. We looked nothing against Sunderland, and Lee made the point that he seems to, throughout this run, have been making decisions that simply make no sense. You know, as you said, you know, playing players in positions which just don't suit them, you know, that sort of deep line too, which we... And putting the wrong midfielders in that, you know, maybe Emery Chan would be good in that system, but, you know, Roy Hodgson was pilloried in the World Cup for playing Henderson and Gerrard side by side as the deep players in a 4-2-3-1, and then, you know, Rodgers has tried to do that, and it's just been very, very odd from a manager who last season was very flexible and did adapt to what was needed at the time. You know, he went from back three to diamond to 4-3-3, and he really did change. Whereas this season, until very recently, it has been this sort of almost stubborn mantra that he's had, that, you know, and it's unfathomable as to how we've fallen so far. And I don't put it entirely down to the loss of just Suarez and Sturridge. That is a huge, huge loss to any team. You know, Suarez is one of the best players in the world, and Sturridge was probably the best out-and-out striker in the league last season. Massive loss to any side, undoubtedly. But I think Rodgers' stubbornness in the wrong things has hugely added to the effect of that, and is why we're where we are. And you know, I think, as I said on Twitter a while back, you know, that there are a lot more things that needs sorting at the club at the moment than just Rodgers. You know, it's you know, there's questions over the ownership, or you know, over whether they're doing enough, you know, over the transfer committee, you know, issues that need answering all over the place, and over Rodgers himself. And you know, he's far from the only problem. I'm just not sure whether he is part of the solution either. I'm on the fence. You know, I think if things haven't improved significantly come the end of the season, then as Lee said earlier, I wouldn't be sad almost to see him given the boot, which is a shame to see for somebody who took us so close to that league title. Yeah. Just to round this off, you know, one point that I raised to you on Twitter recently, and you know, it's been a long time since we've had a 2011 rant from you, so it's a good chance to bring this back in. You know, 2014, there was a suggestion that, you know, we would never get to spend the money that we did in 2011 again, you know, because we spent £100 million. Well, this summer we did, you know, we spent a lot of money. Which window was what? I mean, 2011 was obviously the January window and the summer combined, because we brought Andy Carroll in.
Yeah.
In January, but you know, I suppose the 2011 transfers versus the 2014 transfers. Which one is actually worse?
Well, I'm certainly an authority, if a biased one. 2011. If we're going to take, you know, 2011 windows in their totality and 2014 in their totality, because all we pretty much did in the 2014 January window is try and sign Mohamed Salah and get gazumped, and then try and sign Yevhen Konoplyanka and have all sorts of different, you know, problems and what have you. But I mean, the one thing I'll say about 2014 versus 2011, well, there are two things. First of all, it's early to judge some of the 2014 signings, but two, I think it's quite unlikely any of them is going to be a Luis Suarez in terms of their output and in terms of the money we can then go on and make on them. The one who's got the best chance of that on prior pedigree, and he's only really just started to show glimpses of what he might be capable of, is Markovic. It's hard to conceive of a signing being more stupid than paying £35 million for a tall, immobile centre forward with issues off the pitch, and who at the time was injured because he fell off a bar stool in a casino.
It was, yeah.
I mean, that takes some beating. Even buying a centre back who hasn't been very good at all for £15 million less doesn't really get close to that. But Lovren is, you know, you know, as I said, I don't hold out great hope of Lovren becoming a defensive stalwart. I don't hold any great hope for that. He may prove me wrong, but at the moment it looks like £20 million, you know, questionably spent on any player when we'd spent £17 million on Sacco one season earlier. So that's highly dubious. I mean, Moreno, you know, for £12 million so far, it's jury's out. Seen some good things, seen some bad things. He could really kick on, might not. Manquillo's a loan signing. Balotelli was a gamble that obviously isn't going to pay off. How stupid a gamble it was is hard to know, because I think we did go for other players before arriving at that decision. It's hard to really know what other options we passed up rather than going for Balotelli. You know, Lacazette is one we were linked for. You hear varying things on Lacazette. He's obviously done brilliantly for Lyon, but there were some suggestions. One, that Roger didn't fancy him, and another suggestion was that he actually didn't want to leave Lyon. So we don't really know on that. It's hard to sort of judge too definitively on that. Chan could become a very good player. You know, I think paying £10 million for a player who's 20, already played Champions League football, probably only was allowed to leave Bayern Munich because they'd got, you know, more good midfielders than any club in the world. You know, and was, it's probably not a million miles from the German squad if he was playing regular football. You know, that's not bad business, because you can't get hurt too much on that. You can't lose too much money on it. You may well make a lot of money or just have a good player for a long time. Markovic was a lot of money, but again, you know, he had good pedigree, and you know, buying players at that age makes sense. So I think there are some signings that could come good in there. If anything separates 2014 and 2011, there's no signing that's as bad as Andy Carroll, but I think there's probably not going to be one that's as good as Luis Suarez. Both are quite bad. I kind of, given that Lallana's not a bad player, but it was a lot of money to pay, and you wonder whether we could have bought someone better and who offered strengths more that we didn't have for possibly less money than Lallana. Had we kind of not had this blind insistence on buying Adam Lallana, because, you know, the thing I find odd with Lallana is he's a good player, but he's essentially always going to be a squad player because you've got Philippe Coutinho, who's inconsistent but still fairly young, 22, you know, young for a player with his attributes in that kind of position. And their three best positions, those two, are kind of much the same. You know, Lallana's maybe best as a 10 or wide left. You know, Coutinho's maybe best as an 8, but they all basically can play centre midfield. Field, they can play either flank. So that was odd, but I mean, he's not been a bad player. It was maybe just a lot of money to pay. Jury's out, really, because I mean, again, a lot of this is going to depend on how the younger players kick on, and it's going to depend on where we are at the end of the season. But again, I hold Rodgers responsible for some of it, because clearly the Southampton ones we know are ones that he really pushed for, and those look like the most questionable signings, because a lot of the other ones are too young to judge. The other one, you know, the other one is Balotelli. I don't really blame Rodgers for that at all, because, you know, he's made it pretty clear that that one was, you know, kind of, he was left with that and a few other options, I think, perhaps by the club and the committee. So it's a close call at this stage, I would say. I don't know what you would say on that.
I think purely because of the Suarez factor, I think I might have to judge 2011 as the better transfer period, because
reasonable argument, yeah.
You know, yes, we did at the very same time go and make, you know, I think what is undoubtedly the worst transfer the club has ever made in bringing Andy Carroll, but you know, to go and sign Suarez, who went on to become, as I've said, you know, one of the best players in the world, and you know, whatever the actual figure we sold him for to Barcelona, we made a significant profit on that deal as well. And you're right to say that it's difficult to judge, because we don't know how players like Chan and Markovic and Moreno and Manquillo are going to end up. They're all very young players with potential and you know, big potential upsides for us if they do progress from where they are now. But I think you're right in that. I don't think there's any of them who are going to get to, you know, the same level as Suarez was, or provide the same, reap the same financial rewards for us. So I think I'd, you know, gun to my head, if I had to choose one, I think I'd just about choose the 2011 window as the better one. Which
you've made a good case, to be fair.
Yeah, which, you know, I think just points out just how badly we spent money this summer, and you know, how it's another huge opportunity wasted, you know, with financial fair play and our ownership situation. We're not going to get we're not going to get to spend this level of money that often.
No. The BT deal as well, it's a bad time to miss out on the Champions League gravy train next year.
Yeah, very, very, very much so. Well, you know, we always end up the show making predictions. So I will have to ask you for you know, how you think we're going to end up doing in the league. I think last time we had the podcast, we said we ended up, I think, pretty much agreeing that it was going to be a three-way battle between ourselves, United and Arsenal for the top four. And I think we were split over whether we'd make it. But how are you feeling at the moment?
If it's a yes or no whether we'll finish in the top four, I don't think we will. I don't think we're going to be quite good enough, and I don't think there's going to be enough out there for us to go out and get in January that's going to improve us to the degree that we will. Arsenal always seem to find a way. There are other teams up there, as I said. You know, there's even a slight outside chance of West Ham kind of being up there the way Newcastle were if you go back 3 years, because Allardyce has kind of got a bit of form for it, actually. You know, he did it with Bolton, and he can kind of put things together over a short period of time sometimes, and, you know, kind of surprise one or two people. I don't know. Yeah, I don't think we're going to finish in the top four, sadly. I think we've probably left ourselves a bit too much to do. And we've got too many, you know, vulnerabilities in key areas, basically either end of the pitch. And I think that will limit us. It's the Sturridge injury as much as anything, because I think we'd probably be up there now if Sturridge had been fit, or even if we just got a kind of a decent copy of Sturridge to come in, because I think that would have masked a lot of our problems, particularly in the season in which, you know, everyone bar Chelsea and to a degree City have been pretty terrible. Well, you know, everyone you'd expect to be decent has been pretty terrible so far. I think we've probably left ourselves too much to do, to be honest. That's certainly how I feel about the league. So what would you say?
I can't see us finishing top four, to be honest. You know, I think I'm very pessimistic about our chances on Sunday, and I think, you know, dropping that 8 points behind Arsenal and, yeah, you know, I'm going to assume that United are going to continue their winning run because they've got Villa at the weekend, so they'll go 13 points ahead of us. Mm. And I simply can't see us making that up in what remains of the season, and given what we're likely maybe to spend in January, I just don't see us pulling that back. I think if I had to put a position on it, I'd say 6th or 7th. Mm-hmm. Given the Capital One Cup draw, I don't think we'll progress past the semi-final. I agree with the point you made earlier about the Europa League as well. You know, for all the talk of there's a Champions League place at the end of it, we haven't showed anything in Europe under Rodgers so far to suggest that we're capable of doing that.
Yeah, we're not a good enough team to win a competition like that, in my opinion.
I would say at the moment I'm feeling fairly pessimistic about our prospects for the rest of the season. Yeah. But I suppose that's a good and standard note for us to end the podcast on. Thank you for joining me once again, James.
Pleasure as always.
I'll say thank you to Lee, who had to run off during part three there. And we'll be back when there's more to moan about. Ha 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 ha.